ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hello everybody, welcome to the Attention Please podcast, now on video. If you like this podcast, kindly share, subscribe, like. You know what to do. Today we are going to be reviewing the latest entry into the James Bond franchise, No Time to Die. So, before we get to the spoilers part of the video, my brief verdict, or the TLDR, it's No Time to Die is not a terrible entry into the franchise. It's very meh. But if this was going to be the last Daniel Craig James Bond, as we have been pretty much know for sure now, then it was a very underwhelming entry. It has an amazing theme song, possibly one of the, if not the best Bond theme song of all. But that doesn't save the movie, in my opinion. And this is as far as I'm going to go without providing spoilers. So for the rest of this video and for the podcast, there is a spoiler alert, a heavy spoiler alert in effect, not just for James Bond's No Time to Die, but also for Logan, which was the last entry into the Wolverine franchise, Hugh Jackman's swan song. And the reason why I say so is because I'm going to draw parallels between the two, because there are significant parallels. So before we begin, I'd just like to say that I am an inveterate Bond fanboy. I have all the Bond DVDs. I've been watching it for decades. And the thing about franchises like James Bond and Marvel is that I always think of them as today's version of religion, in the sense that we all know it's that these are all man-made constructs, but we feel immensely passionate about them, immensely passionate about canon, about characters, even though we know that these things don't exist. They have been created by multiple people, often for very, very tangible commercial interests, but yet we believe in them. We believe in their reality. So much of this might seem, for those who are not steeped in Bond fanboydom, is trivial, what I'm going to say. But for somebody who's grown up with Bond, these things are significant. So before we begin talking about plot points of No Time to Die, I'd like to mention one of my favorite scenes from all the Bond movies. In an otherwise pretty ordinary Bond movie called The World Is Not Enough. This was when Pierce Brosnan was playing Bond. So this scene was the last scene of Q, who was the tech wizard guy. It was played by Desmond Llewellyn. And I hope I'm pronouncing the name correctly. So this last scene, what happens is James Bond is trying out the different gadgets when Q says, "I've always tried to teach you two things. First, never let them see you bleed." At which point of time, James Bond asks, "What's the second?" And he says, "Always have an escape plan." So these two things I've always felt have characterized the character of James Bond. That James Bond is invulnerable. You never get to see him bleed. And that he always has an escape plan. So no matter how, and this is part of the whole James Bond lore, that James Bond always gets to escape. And the villains make it very easy for him also. They kind of leave him very easily escapable traps. Rather than taking a gun and shooting him in the head, they will put him in a pool with sharks with lasers on them and then escape and then expect James Bond to die. "I expect you to die, James Bond." And the entire Austin Powers franchise is based on this plot hole, I would say, or this suspension of disbelief that you sign on to whenever you watch a James Bond movie. So much of this changed in 2006 when Casino Royale came out and when Daniel Craig became the new Bond. So they kind of changed Bond's character. So Bond's character used to be this cad, this British cad who's dressed up in impeccable suits, doesn't have much of a back history, doesn't have friends or any relatives. We don't know what he does. He kind of sleeps around with people. And then and the Japanese apparent translation of band was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which it was an old quiz question. And that kind of summarized in four words, or rather two words repeated once, what Bond was. It was a very shallow character, and much of Bond was, you couldn't take it seriously. Most of the early Bond franchises were not supposed to be taken seriously. There was basically Govinda movies with guns. And this campy nature was part of the Bond mystique. So anybody who thinks that Bond was high art, it never was, right? It's never meant to be. Which is why things like plot holes and super villain who sits with a cat, it's always meant to be kind of tongue-in-cheek. And Bond has terrible puns. He makes like what people nowadays say, dad jokes. So, this was never supposed to be serious. Still 2006, when Daniel Craig stepped into the shoes. And this kind of ushered a sea change in the Bond character. So now, never let them see you bleed was thrown out of the window. Bond was bleeding all the time. Bond was shown to be extremely vulnerable. And Daniel Craig's James Bond, I remember the first time when I saw in the theater Casino Royale, that scene where, he sits in that shower with his, shirt and cries and curling into a fetal ball. That was a shocker for us, because this is not what you've seen Bond as. Bond as an emotionally vulnerable individual was something which we were not used to seeing. And it worked. It worked spectacularly, and it kind of gave Bond a new lease of life for a new generation. Because once the Cold War was over, and I know the irony of recording this while Putin is trying to reconstitute the old USSR, but with what we thought that the Cold War was over, Bond kind of lost his relevance. But now, in the new generation of 2006 Bond, the Bond is a more vulnerable, fully fledged. And one other thing that came along with it, which was again very much against the Bond stereotype, was that Bond became a serial monogamist. He was a romantic guy, straight out of Gurukul from Mohabbate. I mean, he was really, really intensely romantic, which wasn't really the Bond of old, right? And this, I think it worked. I think Daniel Craig and the stories, they made it work. It's not that many people were pissed off by this tonal change in Bond, but I found it fine because it was well written into the story. But one thing that was established was he was an intelligent guy. He was, no matter what he was a smart guy, right? And this is where this movie just blows that out of the water within the first 15 minutes, making Bond do something which was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, yes, I know that this is a Bond movie, but this is the new Bond movie, right? We expect something a little bit more cerebral. So Bond gets attacked, and he gets attacked by Blofeld and Spectre. And he immediately begins to suspect Madeline, who is his current girlfriend, who was introduced in the last movie. And why does he suspect Madeline? Because some villain told him so, that, this assassination plot was set up by Madeline. And then while he's driving away with Madeline, Madeline gets a phone call from Blofeld, no less, with the logo of Spectre on the phone saying, well done, you've killed Bond. And he's dead, actually. And this makes Bond go, I think she's in on the plot. Why would you think she's in on the plot when everybody's trying so hard? Your arch enemies. And this is the arch enemy who said that the main reason why he exists is to make sure that everything that Bond loves turns to ash. That guy is doing all of this. No, between that and suspecting his otherwise, somebody who he loves a lot, and this is the central plot point of the entire story, his love for Madeline. Otherwise, this story makes no sense. He basically blows off that central premise in the first 15 minutes. And this is lazy writing. As a writer myself, as somebody who likes to look at good stories, this is where I get turned off totally. This is where the movie stopped working for me. This is point number one, which is why I felt it was, it needed a big rewrite. Second thing was, and let's actually call the spoiler out at the end, though I don't think it's a spoiler for anybody who's read anything about the movie, is that Bond dies at the end. Okay. All right. And he dies on screen. which is, again, something which we've never seen before. But when you have somebody like James Bond, you know, a larger than life figure on whom like a 20, 30 movie almost franchise is based on, it's not a small character, right? You know, the person who kills him should also be similarly memorable. They need to have a long history. And the just like, you know, Moriarty and Sherlock Holmes. And Bond has that arch nemesis. It's Brofield. And he's in this movie and he's played by Christoph Waltz. I mean, these are all great characters, great actors playing great characters. And why wouldn't you have them going at it till the end? Why don't you take that fundamental thread of Bond movies that everything that Bond touches, Blofeld will turn to dust? Why don't you take that? And that actually fits perfectly with the story, by the way. And instead of doing that, what they do is they introduce a new character played by Rami Malek. I've even forgotten what the name of the character is. He hardly has any screen time. And you don't really know what he's trying to do. I mean, of course, in Bond movies, the villain always like wants to destroy the world. That's fine. And that's, you know, that's part of the suspension of disbelief. But here we're trying to go for a more emotional impact, right? This is Bond's last movie. This is the last movie of Bond as we have known him. So you want to kind of explore that emotional core. This is 2006 Bond. It's all about the emotions. So why is Rami Malek doing what he's doing? He's hardly any screen time. I mean, it's hinted at what point of time that he is also in love with Madeleine. But it's really creepy because, you know, if you've seen the movie, it's that the opening sequence is Madeleine is a little girl. He comes to kill her parents and then he can't find her father, kills her mother, and then spares Madeleine's life, kind of saves her because she falls into the ice. The whole thing is very, and it's not never really established. He says it, kind of throws it like that and never talks of it again. And then he kidnaps, "Tumhare maa humare kabze mein hai," that kind of thing. He kidnaps Madeleine and he kidnaps her daughter. Why? Is he more interested? Is there something, what is going on really? It's never really clear. So he kidnaps the daughter of James Bond. And then the daughter, who basically has no lines in the movie, at one point of time, he bites Rami Malek. And then Rami Malek just says, "Oh, all right, that's fine. I'm letting you go." Is that the reason why you kidnapped her? I mean, why did you kidnap? None of this made any sense at the end. And I was like, this is the time when the movie's kind of coming to the end. You're kind of expecting, you know that Bond's going to die. And you kind of, you know, if you watch these movies, you know exactly where this is going. The moment you see that Bond has a daughter, you know where this is going. But what about the rest of the movie? Who wrote this stuff? None of this makes sense. And at the end, I was just waiting for the movie to finish. Like, what BS am I seeing here, man? And the reason why I'm still calling this a decent movie is because there are very good action set pieces in the middle, which is, again, one of the reasons why you watch Bond. If somebody says, "I only want to watch Bond for the stories," it's like saying, I read Playboy for the political analysis pieces, right? So this is not, you know, cerebrality is not part of the Bond appeal. But still, here you're expecting something like this and you're absolutely disappointed. Now, let's look at the centralized dramatic conflict here. And this is where I'll make the analogy with Logan. So they're absolutely the same in both movies. So you have an absentee dad. In one case, it's Wolverine, who's very similar to Bond in many ways, in that, you know, he's a guy who doesn't have attachments. He's lived for quite a long time, as Bond definitely has. Bond has lived a long time because it's just been the way the franchise has been. He's stayed young for like 80, 90 years. You know, he's kind of like Youth Congress there. But at least Wolverine, there's a reason they give why he's eternally youthful. But Wolverine in Logan is dying. I mean, he's losing his powers of regeneration. And both of them are kind of like, you know, people who have been rolling stones who gather no moss. And both of them in these movies encounter a daughter. But this is, and at the end, they kind of redeem themselves in front of their children. So they're similar in many ways, but oh man, the effect. This is like you take one similar plot point and you give it to an amateur and you give it to an expert. Logan, in my opinion, is the greatest superhero movie ever made. because it's a superhero movie is a very small, it's a dismissing the greatness of Logan by calling it a superhero movie. It's just an amazing movie. It's a beautiful movie about aging and about legacy and about fatherhood, couched in Wolverine, because if the Wolverine wasn't there, nobody would have watched that movie if it was just one normal guy. So it made sense. But the reason why I'm comparing it to Wolverine is because, to Logan, I'm sorry, is because you've seen this thing being done once. So unless you want to bring something more to it, why would you take the exact same plot template and put it here? And it really, really fails. Because the biggest thing, the biggest difference between Bond and Logan is that in Bond, there is zero establishment of the daughter-father chemistry. None whatsoever. The daughter doesn't even say anything to the father. Why is the daughter is shown very, to be very little, but the father comes into her life. There is no reconciliation, no getting to know her, nothing. Bond just sees that she has blue eyes. That's it. In contrast, Logan's entire movie is about the daughter and the father, and the daughter rejecting the absentee father. And at the end, which is where it's not Wolverine dying that, you know, gets me all teary-eyed when I watch Logan. And when I saw it for the first time in a theater, I cried buckets. I'd become a father. I don't think I would have enjoyed it that much if I wasn't a father by then. Once I saw it in the father, you just cannot see it with dry eyes. And it's not because Wolverine is dying. That's not the reason why. It's him realizing what fatherhood is. You know, somebody who's never kind of been a father, realizing at the end what it is. And that's what he says. Oh, so this is how it feels. And it's, you know, you can interpret it as this is how it feels to die because he can't die. Or you can interpret it as this is how it feels to love, which also it's a new experience for him to love somebody like a father. It's a very beautiful, poignant ending. And this conflict is shown growing throughout the movie. At the end, there is this great scene in Logan, an amazing scene. For those of you who haven't seen it, I don't know why I haven't seen it. So it's where X-23, who's his daughter, is fighting. And she doesn't expect her father, who's an absentee father, to come back. And then she looks up, she's fighting. She looks up and she sees Logan, Wolverine. And he is like, he's taken this drug, which is going to kill him at the end, but it restores his youthful vitality. And she sees her father in the prime of what her father used to be. Like he's like skiting through the military. Nobody can stop him. He's unstoppable. And she looks at him and she can see the acting is beautiful. She looks at him and she sees her father. And that kind of makes her fight also. And she gets hurt. None of this is in Bond. See, that is where the poignancy of Logan comes in. It's the beautiful exploration of the father-daughter dynamic of which there is none. So at the end, when Bond dies for his daughter and for his girlfriend, you're wondering, why is he doing that? I mean, he left his girlfriend for 5 years. And for 5 years, he didn't bother on the most flimsy of excuses. So where's the love there? And with his daughter, he just knows that there's a daughter. And, you know, Bond, we have always known, is kind of a, you know, for the Majesty's service, he's in her Majesty's service. So why does Bond decide to die? I mean, we get it. We get it that Bond realizes fatherhood and, you know, we get it, but it's not established. It's just like you know, you go to any writing school, they'll say, show, don't tell. Bond, absolutely, this movie just tells it like it is. It doesn't show at all, which is why the end kind of left me cold. Absolutely left me cold. I didn't think that I would be left cold seeing James Bond die. But I was. I was like, okay, it's done. The only poignancy that I found, which is what brings me to how I started this video as, is what were the two things that defined Bond? One was never let them see you bleed. So he bleeds and always have an escape plan. So he dies where he chooses not to take his escape plan. He doesn't escape. He stands there, even though he knows he can escape. But of course, this movie doesn't bring that line back. If it had brought that line back to emphasize its poignancy, I would have said that's good writing. And that's a hat tip to Bond lore. But it doesn't do any of that. This is me essentially trying to create some kind of poignancy in my mind so that I can feel something. So it's almost like a post facto justification to myself is that, you know what? It started with Bond losing his invulnerability, and it ends with Bond losing the other part of what made Bond Bond, that is him always having an escape plan. That gave some level of poignancy, though I'm pretty sure that was not what the movie makers were going for. So that's about it. That's about it for today. I will be back in maybe in two more weeks. Till then, everybody stay well. Bye-bye.